Hi, my name is Lena Fersch and I have been in love with improvised theater for half my life. Lately, however, things haven't exactly been great. Improv and I were going through a rough patch and I need some outside help. I really want to get the spark back in the relationship. So I decided to talk to improvisers from around the globe to seek advice. How can I make up with improv? Let's find out. Today I'm speaking with Alana Hicks, who lives in Dubai. I met her when I was a guest instructor at the Courtyard Playhouse in Dubai. She is a teacher there and she's an improviser, she's an actor, she's a great woman who's very inspiring. I was lucky to get her on this podcast and to talk to her about improvisation, about life, about being a single mom, about life in the Middle East, and. So without further ado, I present to you Alana Hicks.
To be honest, Lena, I go through those phases all the time, all the time. And I don't think that you are alone there. I think that almost every improviser that I know does go through those phases. In fact, I was just talking to a fellow improviser who's currently in South Africa, and she had a break for a while because of the pandemic and went to go back to do some lessons as in teaching and also just to play. And she said she felt a huge amount of anxiety about going back. And I was saying that I shared the same thing, which is kind of hilarious because the whole idea behind improv is to not panic and you can't fail and you know, it's playing, it's relying on each other, but it's funny how quickly you fear the failure.
Is that the fear for you, that the fear of failure that sometimes makes you anxious?
Yeah, I think it is, but as soon as you get there and you connect with the people that you're playing with, then it kind of just flies out the window. But I also, as an actor as well, I do believe that fear and nervousness is really important to then the level that you are expressing on stage. Because I think you need to care about something enough to either want to have a break or to embrace it again because you do love it so much that you want to give it everything you've got. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Like someone who goes to the gym, not that I go to the gym, but someone who goes to the gym and then if they don't go for a while, then that fear and dread of going back, you know, I have to start from scratch. Oh, it's going to be, you know, and then you get back and there's all that muscle memory and it starts all over again. And I think it's the same with improv. It is a muscle that needs to be flexed, but I don't think it takes long to get back to where you were.
I hope so. I mean, I'm also wondering if I really want to go back to where I was exactly, right? And I'm going back to why did I want to take a break from it in the first place? I mean, it really wasn't my choice. It was the pandemic that made that choice for me. And then, like you said, I sort of began dreading the moment when I would have to go back to doing it. So I went back and thought, what's the problem? Why do I not want to go back? And I think there's many problems. One of them being, or one question that I have is, how do I keep myself inspired? Because if there's inspiration, then you know why you do a certain thing.
Yeah, definitely. You know, well, that was the question I was going to ask you. What gives you that feeling of dread? What would be the biggest piece of the pie that makes you feel anxiety about the situation of is it getting back on stage or is it just playing?
It's
or is
playing.
It teaching?
It's teaching and playing, both of those things. But with teaching, to me, teaching has always been more of the thing that I have to do in order to also be performing. Don't get me wrong, I like teaching, but my passion is acting for sure. And what I'm dreading is playing again and and sort of getting lost in this is that show and that is that show, and losing sight of the direction that I'm going with this. I talked before in this podcast, I talked about commitment and my lack of commitment, but I think I'm getting to the point where I understand why I was lacking commitment. And I think that is that the overall picture was missing. I was just doing shows to do shows and not really because I knew where I was headed, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I know what you mean. So you weren't particularly inspired and it was almost like a job that had to be done.
I think so, yeah.
Do you think maybe if you started in a new show, or if you went back, even if it was the same show, if maybe you gave yourself challenges before you went on stage?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea, to give myself challenges. I think it would be, because I do that sometimes with shows, I think I would have to set them bigger, you know, like what's my goal for the next year? What's my goal for the next this and that many shows, you know, sort of to get like a direction of where I'm headed, to find out, why do I go on stage? Why am I doing this?
Oh, that's a very big picture you're painting. You know? The challenges I was thinking about were small.
Do a French really character. Large. Do a French character in the next show.
Because I know, I think for me with improv, I am inspired by the people I work with.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm doing script work and acting, I push myself as an actor to really be that character and really make the words come to life. And I use improv to make a script fresh if it's being performed over and over. So you had a run for 2 months, then you would use improv to freshen up your own performance. But I feel when I perform improv, for me, I think most of my inspiration comes from the people that I'm about to go on stage with. And if I'm not particularly inspired or trust the people I'm about to get on stage with, then sometimes that's when I get a bit stuck, or that's when I feel a bit of dread about doing it. But when I know I'm going to work with someone who's going to challenge me and who's going to rise to a challenge and who's going to push me in a scene and really commit with me hard, then I love it.
Do you love it then more than a script acting? Or
yes.
Yes?
If you know, imagine one of your favorite players and you're doing a show that you, with a format that you normally do, but you've challenged yourself to make sure that you do like a heavy scene or a serious scene, or even a scene where you, you know, you're going to use, I don't know, a particular character. And you've got it in your head that it's going to happen, but because it's improv, you may not even get the chance to get on with that person, but you're pushing for it. You know what I mean? Instead of the same format. I bet if we were on stage together and we challenged each other,
it'd be magical. Memorable. Yes.
It really would.
Phenomenal, for sure. It's funny that you're saying this because I've been talking to a friend, a mutual friend, Nadine Antler.
Well, I was just thinking, if you're on stage with her doing a scene.
Well, we're working on a project at the moment. It's still in the, well, in Germany, we would say it's still in its children's shoes. But we're working on something, trying to find something. And she talks a lot about what's complicité, or I don't know if complicity is a word in English. Is it a word?
Yeah, like, if something's complicit.
Yeah, like your partners in crime. You want to be partners on crime.
Yep.
In crime on stage. You want to know the other person so well that you know how to push their buttons. You want to challenge them. You want to make them feel good when they need it. You want to be playful. You need that as a base, and then you can go anywhere. And I have a company that I appreciate very much, Der Kaktus in Würzburg. And I think we have a lot of that, a lot of trust with one another. So when we go on stage together, I actually feel like we're having a good time. Sometimes I'm just wondering, what is our next step as a company? Like, where are we headed? You know, because I wanna think big in a way. I actually have like a wish to fail, to be really bad at something again. or to try something that could go horribly wrong, just to feel alive and challenged and moving, and you know.
Yeah, that's interesting too that you say that, because most of us do have that fear of failure, but you have the fear that you don't fail and that you want to fail, so you need something bigger.
I think I have a fear of being bored. I have a fear of being too comfortable. I think I have that in general, a fear of being too comfortable with things.
It sounds like you do. From our conversations earlier.
Do you have that? Do you sometimes feel like things are too comfortable, or no? You're just shaking your
head. Lena, if you knew my life, nothing ever gets too comfortable for
Tell me,
me
about I'm, your I'm, life. Tell me about
I'm,
it.
I'm a single mum. I married, and I came to Dubai from London, originally from Australia. Mm-hmm. I ended up marrying an African Muslim guy, and we thought that love could, you know, outshine everything that was going to happen in our lives. And he left me when she was 2 months old.
That is, oh wow.
No, you can't. It was awful at the time, but ever since then, you know, I've had so many challenges living in a Middle Eastern country, trying to raise a daughter on my own. Mm-hmm. But I remained married, and I had all those different layers of laws and the way things work. And, you know, Lena, nothing's been simple for me.
Yeah.
I want comfortable. But then on the same token, I'm super creative, but I think I'm happy to have my home life stable, and then I feel like I might flourish a bit more in other things, but yeah. I still constantly push myself creatively every single day, mm-hmm. I'd say. But yeah, it's not easy, I don't think, but I think it's something that you are born to do, to be someone that can't sit still, to be someone that wants to keep reinventing, wants to keep inspiring, wants to keep being inspired.
Yeah, I guess it has a lot to do with everything that's going on in one's life, right?
Yeah.
You just said you're a single mom, you have a daughter, and you live in Dubai, so far away from where you're originally home. From. I'm just wondering, from home. First off, I'm really interested in learning, what is it like to raise a daughter in the UAE?
Well, I think it's I've found there to be challenges. One of the big sort of tricky parts for me is because I married a Muslim, automatically my daughter becomes Muslim. And by law here, she has to study Islamic and do Islamic classes, but I'm not Muslim, so I don't know. I know a lot about the, you know, about Islam, and I know a lot about, you know, how it all works, but I don't practice it at home as you would in an Islamic class. So that's been tricky because there's no one here that she relates to that does that sort of thing. But then on the same token, I think it's pretty cool that she's been exposed to different religions, different celebrations, different types of families. There's not that many single parent families in this country, mm-hmm. and there's not many families who have one child in this country. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's difficult for her to understand. But then on the flip side, because it's been her and I, and we're living in the Middle East, she's been able to do a lot of travel. She spent a lot of time at the theatre. She's pretty much grown up at the theatre. She was there from when she was 3 months old. And now she's taking classes, and she comes and does classes with me, and she's done videos with
How
us for storytelling
now?
For children. Seven.
Seven.
And she loves the stage, absolutely loves it. But she's quite shy and quiet in everyday life. But once she's on stage, she's a different kid.
That's great.
Yeah. I'm very lucky.
about her being exposed to different, you know, cultures and all of that thing. That's just that's a very Dubai thing, right? I've never experienced a place like it anywhere else in the world because people just come from all over the world. If you're looking at the Courtyard Playhouse, it's like a mini world in the world where, you know, all the ethnicities and you know, everything just coexists in this place. It's like a weird bubble, hey?
It really is. In fact, I had a show last weekend. I was teaching improv for actors. It's a new course at the Courtyard. And it's such a mix of people. And I had a scene with a Russian fellow called Valerie and another scene with a Lebanese lady called Maya. And Valerie was using elements of a monologue he'd done before, and Maya was improvising around elements of the monologue, and the audience gave them a location and all this sort of, so we're mixing script and improv. And Valerie's accent is so heavy, you know, this heavy Russian, you are, you know, and Maya's accent is quite, you know, Lebanese. Mm-hmm. And the two of them on stage, it actually was comedy gold. And at one point, because we do have a lot of people from Arab countries here, so a lot of our audience is from different Arab places, you know, she said in Arabic, you know, for the love of God, I can barely understand you in English, and now you're speaking Russian. And she said that in Arabic because he started, like, he was speaking to her and she's like, I can't understand you in English, and, you know, and he started speaking in Russian. And it was hilarious because obviously the audience felt the same way. But I was teaching him, and obviously he was part of the course, and you have to accept, you know, people's accents, and then in improv, make the most of them. Mm-hmm. So we did discuss when we were doing rehearsals and lessons, you know, use your native tongue. Use it. If there comes a chance where you're frustrated and you can't think of what it is in English, say it in your own language, mm-hmm. you know. And we had such a mix of people in that group. So you're 100% right. Valerie's from Russia and he's been here 8 months, I think. And Maya's from Beirut and she'd been here 10 days. I had another girl mm-hmm. from Saudi Arabia. I had another girl from LA. I had a girl from London. Mm-hmm. I had a girl from India. Like, I had a guy from Iraq. It's just a totally mixed pot, but I love it.
So this is all happening at the Courtyard Playhouse, where you teach acting and improvising. Maybe for everyone listening who has never heard of the Courtyard before, what kind of place is that?
So it's a cozy, stunning little theatre set in the industrial area of Dubai, which is now known as, I guess, a bit of a creative hub and district. Probably since you came 3 years ago, we've got even more cafes mm-hmm. and art galleries and things that have popped up down there.
Nice.
A lot of markets get held down there. So we run children's classes, teenage classes, adult classes in drama and in improvisation. We have shows almost every night of the week.
There's not a lot of culture going on in Dubai, right? I always felt like the Courtyard Playhouse is like a sanctuary for the people who really want to go on stage and do theater.
100%. I would say that you're 100% there. And I think that the Courtyard is very unique in that sense. But in the last 3 years before COVID hit, we've had more and more kind of pop-up theatres. And since COVID has hit, which is interesting enough, we've had a lot going on online. So a lot of comedy festivals online, a lot of visual shows online. And I guess because we can collaborate with people from, I did a Zoom show with people. Some people were in Malaysia, some people were in the UK, and some of us were here in Dubai, and we rehearsed and then filmed, and we've had interesting things popping up in relation to digital art and performance at the moment.
Do you find that inspiring?
Yeah, I do. What I need to do is stop working on my weekends and go and do it and have a look.
Yeah.
Sometimes I get a bit caught up and I in what I'm doing at the courtyard that I forget that there's also a world yeah. out there. But what I do love, the courtyard has, you know, I've been a part of it since it started, and I've made a lot of friends that I would say are like family. And God, the opportunities, the people that I've met, like you and Nadine and Sean and Patty and, you know, Daniel and Felipe, I could just list off millions of names, and I'm forever grateful that I've been able to make those connections.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And be inspired and watch the best of the best and met the best of the best, because let's face it, improvisers are pretty cool people, and generally we do like to yes and we do like to support each other. And that's why I'm here, trying to get you back on your improvisation situation.
I really appreciate it. I really do. Yeah, no, but I 100% agree with you. No, it's nice to have friends all around the world and to make those connections. Yeah. I'm just wondering if you know if everyone just let you, Alana, do your thing, you know, like no strings attached. You can do with Dubai and the cultural life of Dubai whatever you wanted, and you had the time and the resources to do it.
And the money,
of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What would be a really cool thing that you'd like to do?
Bring all you guys back for a reunion show.
That would be awesome.
And from years ago, so even people that weren't there when you were there, and other instructors and improvisers, anyone who had been there for an extended period of time, to like come back and do some sort of 5-star Dubai style glamping improv experience.
That would be nice. That would be nice, because also afterwards we could just hang out and have beers and, you know, just be together.
That's what I mean. Great. And yeah. Be in the sunshine and be in the pools. But that's what I mean by being 5-star, because then we can be in the nice swimming pools after.
Yes. I still remember we went to this one water park when I was there, and they had a slide that really wasn't a slide, because you were standing in sort of a tube and you had to hold your shoulders like
Atlantis.
It was
the drop. Yeah.
I did the leap of faith.
The leap of faith.
Exactly. Exactly. The leap of faith. it's true, because I was like,
yeah,
almost crying when I was there, and they did the countdown, and then they just opened the floor and there you go. You just fall down. That was kind of cool. I would like to do that again.
Well, maybe that's what, maybe your next improvisation show could be called The Leap of Faith.
I like that. The Leap of Faith. Then I'll have to do something really risky though. I'll have to find something that's really risky.
Really risky. Yeah. Maybe do it naked.
You know what? Why not? You know, I think in the UAE, maybe I can't bring that show to the UAE.
No, you probably can't.
It wouldn't be a good idea.
You can't, but I did have one of my students do a monologue and last weekend, and she was Eve from Adam and Eve,
mm-hmm.
and her costume was amazing. It was like, it wasn't skin color though. I don't know whose skin is like this weird creamy beige. But it was this beige, like, unitard that was a bit saggy in places, with 3 fig leaves.
Nice.
Very classy. So maybe the leap of faith could be you with your fig leaves.
So it's the leaf of faith.
Yeah. So clever.
We got it. It's perfect.
Oh, my. That's what it is. You just wear the leaf of, and you've got to hope it doesn't blow off. You could do it outside.
I really like that. That's perfect. It's an open air show, and I'll just have to hope that they stay in place. Thank you so much. I think you might have just solved my situation, and now I have to stop that podcast because I am healed.
It's the leaf of faith outside, naked, putting your faith that the weather's going to be okay and keep the leaves in place while you yes and do improv.
Perfect.
That's it. Thank you.
that you'd like to not live in Dubai anymore and maybe go back home?
Shall I say it quietly? Yes, I think about it all the time.
You're far away from home, Elena.
I know. But you know what? Australia won't let me in.
Australia, because of the pandemic or just...
Yeah.
Do they have...
Not yeah. because they don't want me there, Elena.
Just wanted to make sure. It was just like, no.
I haven't
Elena's
done anything
coming back.
Wrong or illegal. No, they just... Because of the pandemic, they've put caps on all the flights, and then you have to do 2-week quarantine that you have to pay a huge amount of money for. And to be able to get in is near impossible. There's been people waiting 6, 8, 12 months to go home, and therefore, if they lost their jobs 12 months ago, they're in a lot of trouble now.
Oof. Yeah. If the pandemic didn't happen, would you would you consider going home, or is Dubai your are you so at home in Dubai as well now that it's not really an option anymore?
You know what? I had the same conversation with my mother only yesterday.
Really? Does she want you to come home?
Yes. And I said, well, it's the same as your leap of faith. Mm-hmm. I need a leap of faith to pack up my life here and believe that when I get home to Sydney that everything will work. And I'm not saying that everything works perfectly here because life isn't perfect. But I love what I do here in terms of my job, and I teach performing arts at a school. I work with little kids and big kids, and then I teach at the courtyard, and I get to work with little kids and really, really big kids, like, you know, even people as old as 70. And I guess I'm worried that I'll go home and I'll need to rebuild myself, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I need all those connections again to do all that work. And that's what I love to do. And I'm sure I could do it all again, but you know, it's exhausting.
Yeah. And also there's your daughter to think about, right? But she's been, right?
Oh no, she's been lots of times and she really wants to, we've only missed recently going home last summer because we couldn't because of the pandemic. So I don't think we'll be going home this summer either, which is devastating because summer in Dubai is very hot. Were you here when it was really hot?
It was just starting to get hot. We left at the end of May, so it was getting there. But I think July is also humid, right? Then it gets really difficult.
July and August can get up to nearly 50 degrees with 80% humidity, and it's just nuts. To answer your question, yes, I miss home. I'd love to think that I could, you know, go anywhere, but I could go anywhere, couldn't I? Take that leaf of faith.
You could go anywhere for sure, yeah.
I'll but just it's put a big... three big leaves on and go. It is. It's a huge deal. We think that it's not, but moving is a huge deal. I remember when I moved to London, it was the same thing, and you have to give it time. And I have heard... that moving back, I think it takes a good 12 months to settle, even if it's your home country, if you've been away for too long.
So when
I've been so used to such a multicultural place, such a different place where women are also treated a little bit differently here. Lifestyle is different here. It's fast. It's a bit furious, I guess.
It's a strange life. I mean, everything takes place on the inside because it's so hot. You just can't be on the outside for a long time. I once made the mistake to walk from that little mall that's close to the courtyard.
Yeah, Times Square.
Yeah, I walked from there to the courtyard, and I got there like I was a puddle of sweat, a human puddle of sweat. And I thought, it's just a few, you know, like what is it, 200, 300 meters?
Yeah.
And it's really, really insane.
Yeah, it really is. But it's funny, we do spend a lot of time outside in the winter.
So November, December, it's nice.
Oh my gosh, every weekend you're out.
Oh, nice.
And you're sitting out at night and you're out in the mornings and you're at the beach and you're at the pool and you're at a park and you're at the markets. But it's now starting to get like literally in these next few weekends we'll be outdoors as much as possible. I can hear kids behind me in the pool all sort of playing around, but we do have to chill the pools. We have to make them cold so that we can get in them. Otherwise, we just boil like a little sausage.
Yeah, I understand that, you know, going anywhere from a place like this is sort of a culture shock. When you first went to London, what made you take that leap of faith?
It was because, to be 100% honest, if I wanted to take up my working visa in London, I needed to get there before I was 25. So I traveled around for like 6 months. I did a lot of Europe and then went to London, started teaching and setting up a bit of a life there. And then every holiday I got, like every good Australian, traveled. And then I came to Dubai.
How?
And then I thought I'd just be here for how my brother was working for the Australian consulate as trade commissioner. And he said, come here for a holiday. And me and my girlfriends, we were like, okay. And it was freezing cold in London and we packed up our stuff and we came to Dubai and he had a pool and he had a maid and we were like swimming and at the beach clubs and we're like, oh my God, this is amazing. And about a week before I left, he said to me, I've got you a few job interviews. And I went, what? And he said, before you go, I've got 3 job interviews lined up. And I was like, oh my God. And so I went for a few job interviews to appease my big brother because he's my big brother. And, you know, at the time I was deciding, do I stay in the UK and get a highly skilled visa because I'd already done my 3 years?
Mm-hmm.
Do I go home? Do I go to another country? So I was already in the midst of applying for a highly skilled visa and I got 2 of the jobs out of the 3 in Dubai. And so I decided to come. And then one of my friends who I live with in London, she applied for the job that I didn't take and she got the other one.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So is your brother still there as well?
No, he's back in Australia. Mm. And my friend Amber is back in Australia. I'm still here.
So
looking, who would have thought?
Yeah, well, life is, you know, we never know where we end up.
We don't.
Do you think you would do it all the same if you could go back to like certain steps that you took? Because there were many big decisions involved, right? Moving,
yeah.
Getting married, all of those things. Would you do it all the same?
It's such a cliche, but yes, I would. Because I have the daughter that I have, all the hardship and all the crap that went with that, is so worth it because I feel lucky that I've been able to have a child because I do have friends that have always wanted kids and it hasn't worked out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I always wanted more than one, but I'm really grateful that I have one and she's amazing.
Hmm.
So I think like all those hardships are worth it.
Hmm.
And I think, you know, everyone has hardships, but I think the hardships are what make you who you are today. And if I hadn't have stayed in Dubai, I wouldn't have met you.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, it's those little steps along the way, you know. I wouldn't have known that a Mentos was a chewy draggy.
I was just going to say, I taught you French. Without me, you would never know the right pronunciation of draggy.
Yeah, that's it. But we called it a draggy.
The draggy. Draggy.
Dragé, the chewy dragé. We were like, I was like, why would they call it a dragé? I think there's and I see that a lot here. I see it a lot here because in different cultures it's still very much expected that you should be married by a certain age and have children by a certain age. And I think my culture, it wasn't so much that way. It used to be. And then I'm like, my generation was a tricky generation because my mum's generation, they got married young, they have children, they build up their business and their life. And then my generation, we got encouraged to go to university, go and travel overseas, go and do everything before you get married and settle down. But then when I was traveling overseas, there sort of came this expectation of, well, when are you going to come home and settle down? Because I think enough's enough. Mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But we were told to do it, and then we were told enough's enough. And then I do remember when I fell pregnant here, I had like an obstetrician, and she was Iranian, and she did – I was a geriatric pregnancy because I was 35, and – you know, she said, oh, you're so lucky, da 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 da. And I said, yeah. I said, a lot of my friends are finding it difficult to fall pregnant. She said, well, you are 35. And I was like, I thought there was still plenty of time. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, you know, you girls, you want it all. You want, you know, the job, the career, the travel, and then you still want children on top. And she's right. And I think we deserve all of that. I think it's just unfair that maybe genetics puts a little timer on it. Mm-hmm. I think that it is unfair because we deserve to have all of that. But on the same token, it's awful that we can have all of that. And then because we've spent time enjoying life and becoming educated and building careers, then suddenly we can't have the family because we've left it too long.
Mm-hmm.
That's still something that I struggle with because I have friends who don't have children or marriages are broken up because they've decided not to or careers come first and then they've decided they want to and now it's too late. And that's a tricky one.
Yeah, it is a really tricky one for sure.
Yeah, that's a whole another podcast, you know, and then you've got friends who, you know, I've got friends that are single and male and have been friends my entire life. And they're now talking about they can't get invited to, like, you know, their friend's four-year-old birthday party because it's, like, a bit weird that the single guy turns up at the, you know, and he's in his 40s and he's at the children's trampoline party because, you know, people automatically walk up and go, hi, which one's yours? Yeah. And he says, and he's like, oh, no, I don't have anyone here. And they go... Somehow they manage to, like, disappear from the conversation. Or I have girlfriends in the same scenario. Which one's yours? I'm like, no, no. Oh, is your husband here? No, no, I'm not married. And then suddenly they're like, where's my husband? She better not go and talk to my husband.
Yeah, but also I feel like, especially with that, like, where's your husband? Where's your wife? We're so trained to ask that question or, you know, to answer that question from a really young age. I remember when I was like 15 or 16, people would come up to me and ask me, so do you have a boyfriend? And who's your boyfriend? And,
yeah.
And it's like, I had to say no most of the time when people asked me and I felt a little weird about it. And it's just always very interesting for people to find out your relationship status because I do think that... you only count as half of a person if you're single. And I think that's a big problem.
And it shouldn't be that way, should it? You know, here in the Middle East, when you get employed, you have to put whether you're single, married, or divorced. You even have to prove if you're divorced. I don't know why you have to put you divorced.
Because you're damaged, Elena. Because you're damaged. Damaged goods.
That's what makes me interesting, Lena.
Yeah, for sure. But you're absolutely right. Aren't we all damaged goods? It's just you put on that label and, you know, I always think like the happy family with the two parents and the three kids and everything, it looks really nice from the outside. But I also feel like we're moving on from that slowly, but we're moving away from it. Because if I think about my parents' marriage, for instance, I think they're really happy that they have each other and they were going through rough times. Of course, like every married couple does.
Yeah.
But I honestly think they never thought to themselves, oh, divorce would be an option. Of course it was, but I think that's really not how they were wired. And I'm really glad they didn't get a divorce and they're really happy. But also it's not like we're social animals, right? We want to be liked and we don't want to be excluded from something. And when people look at you weird because you got a divorce, you're going to think about it long and hard before you take that step. And I think a lot of people stay in unhappy marriages or unhappy relationships because of that. And yeah, so I think, as a single mom that you are, you're probably a really good role model for your kid also, right? Because you're just doing it by yourself. And it's hard, but you're doing it.
Yeah, and because you don't want to, and you don't want them to see unhappiness, do you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's no point in, because that would only breed more unhappiness. Oh, no, she's way better off in the scenario she's now. I don't deny that if things were great, I think she'd be better off with two. But with whatever situation you have, you're better off being happy.
And you never know what life throws at you, right? Like, you can be really happy and then a car hits you. it's that
Alanis Morissette song, isn't it ironic?
Yeah.
I think it's that. Speaking of ironic, come here. My daughter's just walked in.
Oh.
I said that I was talking and that if they came in, they had to be quiet. Lena probably, can you hear Lena saying hi? She's in
hi,
my ear.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Fia. How are you doing?
Lena saw you. She said, hi, Fia. How are you doing?
Good.
Good, that's
she
great.
She saw you when you were really little.
Aww.
At the theatre.
Yeah.
Lena used to work with us at the theatre.
Where does she work now?
In Germany. Okay, you go have a shower.
Yep.
Bye.
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 So sweet.
See, that's what you do it for. And she loves doing drama and she loves improv. And
that's so
that's
awesome.
Really cool.
Also, what I just found when I was in Dubai with the kids programs that they have, it's such intense work in that theater that they can really bring out the best of these kids. I saw some amazing improvisers at the age of 15 where I was like, why am I not there yet? like lots of kids coming out of the Courtyard Playhouse that are really talented and great actors at a very
there
young
is.
Age. Yeah.
There is. And I think if you love something and you're given the opportunity to hone that and work with some of the best of the best, I think, and you're given the confidence and opportunity,
yeah,
how can you go wrong? And especially when you're young, you don't have that fear.
I think that's absolutely right. But I also think the cool thing about the Courtyard is kids learn and it's not a lot of pressure. You just do your class and you hang out with your friends. And it's different, I think, in this whole LA movie business where you're really, you have your mom as a manager and you have to go to these castings and there's a lot of...
Yeah.
I mean, that's my image in my head. I've never been a kid in LA being pushed, but that's just what I'm imagining. So this is nice because people really get to thrive or kids get to thrive and to learn and to develop skills that they really, are passionate about. But also they're just having fun. So that's great. I like that combo.
No, 100%. And I think that also falls into the same category for adults. They get an opportunity to just do it all again.
Yeah.
Without feeling like there has to be some huge result, but it's just enjoying life, enjoying creativity, enjoy being inspired and enjoy meeting like-minded, cool people.
Doing something for the sake of it really is important.
Yeah.
Maybe I should remind myself because I've been talking so much about my big vision that I need in order to go back to improvisation. Maybe I just need to do it for the sake of it. Maybe that's the key.
Yeah, I don't think you need a big vision. I think we still need to keep the leaf of faith. That's mm-hmm. the big vision.
All right, yeah.
But
that's
then
set
I
in
just
stone.
Think you need to just play. Have a couple of drinks and play, even if you're playing on Zoom.
Yeah, I did one Zoom show that I actually really enjoyed. That was quite fun.
But don't make it a Zoom show. Just make it play. As in, like, just meet a few of your friends and jam on Zoom. And maybe you could get different people from all around the world and, like, okay, you two up. All right, this game.
Yeah, just like a grown-up playground.
Yeah, a grown-up playground where you can have a drink and play. And the cool thing, I guess, about this pandemic is how much it's opened up this whole, the globe has suddenly become quite small in lots of ways.
Yeah, I agree with that. I took workshops with people that I've never seen before, and it got to chatting to them afterwards. That was nice.
Yeah, amazing.
Elena, thank you so much for talking to me on this podcast. It's been lovely to catch up with you.
Thank you, Lena. It's good. You know, we're so blessed in comparison to, you know, lots of other people in lots of other places who may be in lockdown and don't have the same facilities that mm-hmm. you and I have, or the same medical or healthcare. So
true.
At this very point in time with what's going on in India, I feel very lucky. I'm very lucky to be talking to you, and that your family's healthy and my family's healthy. And, you know, the biggest thing we need to worry about is what time we're going to meet on Zoom.
Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed this episode. The next episode will actually be the last one before I take a little bit of a summer break, so make sure to tune in. But this is going to be a German edition, so I'm sorry to all the English listeners out there. This was the last one for you before the summer, but don't be sad. There will be more Making Up with Improv after the summer break. Also, there's one more thing. This podcast is produced by the Association of the Würzburger Impro Theater Festival. Many of you might know our main annual event that usually happens at the end of October. This year, however, it's going to happen in July, so make sure to check out our website for more info. But we also organize various other projects throughout the entire year. For instance, this podcast. If you'd like to support our work, you can help us with a donation. You can donate via PayPal. That's paypal.me/improvfestival, or directly to our bank account. For more info, visit the link in the description. Thank you so much, and have a great day wherever you are on this planet.